The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. And now we're not saying anything. Oh no, this is Brent and Lydia talking Starman.
Yay. Lydia is down with some kind of sinus infection, so I'm like sucking on a sweet. You might hear it. I'm sorry. But yay!
She may cough, she may not. We'll see how it goes.
Yep.
You know, just bear with us. It's hay fever season.
Yes. Okay, so what are we up for today?
We are up for our 28th episode.
Ooh.
Where we are going to talk about issue number 25.
Okay.
And that 25th episode was released in December of 1996. Cover dated, you know the drill by now.
Yes. So and, what happened? Are you going to tell us what happened in 1996?
I will. I've got three little bits, and I'll admit, I don't know how much we're going to talk about some of them, because they are kind of horrible.
Okay.
Yeah. One of them is on December 10th of 1996, was part of the Rwandan genocide, where the Maurice Baril, military advisor to the UN Secretary General and head of the UN Military Division of the Department of Peacekeeping Operations, recommended the UN multinational forces in Zaire stand down. Mm. So this, you know, is definitely a very upsetting part of world history, where basically they kind of said, let it happen. And, you know, that's kind of definitely a truncation of the Rwandan genocide, but, you know, it just kind of was allowed to be.
Yeah. It's tragic.
Yes.
Wow. There hadn't been anything. I don't remember it because I was 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't watching the news when I was 8. Mm. But I think I heard about it when I got a lot older, like when I was in secondary school or something like that. No, even later than that. Hmm. Yeah.
You know, I know it happened when I was 15. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those things that's kind of like in my memory of like, oh, right, I remember hearing about this, but it's not very clear.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there's you know, it's hard to say how many of my memories of the genocide are influenced by Hotel Rwanda, which is just an incredibly emotional and moving movie starring Don Cheadle about that event and a hotel trying to basically keep people safe.
Mm-mm. I haven't watched that, but it's because of that film. Like, it was introduced to me by one of my lecturers in school. Mm. That's how I heard of the Rwanda genocide. Yeah.
Number two on our list of just terrible things that happened in December of 96 was, you know, I'd kind of be surprised if, being from Singapore, if you'd have heard about this, but the body of JonBenet Ramsey was discovered. JonBenet Ramsey was a 6-year-old beauty pageant contestant.
Oh.
Yes. Who was found in Colorado, and it really made national news, not only because, you know, of obviously the death of a child, but also because there were so many pictures of her trying to in like the beauty pageant industry, which, you know, I'll admit, seeing teeny tiny beauty queens creeps me out.
I know what you mean. Yeah, with the makeup and everything, right?
Yes, and also that it's an unsolved killing that where for a while there the suspects were her parents, and I think at some point it was even her like 9-year-old brother was also a suspect, although he was later like kind of fully cleared. But it just kind of goes down as an unsolved, you know, crime. But
9 years old, wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it's still unsolved?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So it was February of 2009, according to Wikipedia. It was reopened, but there doesn't seem to be any, you know, movement on it. I mean, this is a comic podcast, not a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we need to get too much more into it than that, other than to say that was just another thing that really, really made headlines in when I was 15.
Mm. Okay.
The other sorry. Did you have?
No. I was just thinking. So this Starman thing must have come out during that time, and then that was the news. That's the only thing I was like thinking about. Okay, go on.
Yeah, and then the last one. This is kind of a more tearful, although it does fall under the horror category. Is the movie Scream?
Okay, I watched that.
Yeah, that came out. And that, you know, kind of being the would it count as meta? I don't quite know. Genre aware popular horror movie. Kind of what was thought to have, you know, breathed new life into horror movies for a time.
Yeah, I get what you mean. That happened with Cabin in the Woods, I think.
Yeah, you know, well. I still haven't watched that. I have it like on my hard drive through iTunes, but I'm still just like, oh, I need to watch that, but I just haven't yet.
Right, it's pretty good. I feel like it sort of like reinvented the genre. Not that I watch a lot of horror movies, but interestingly, because I think it was like heralded as the new Scream or something, because Scream, you know, it breathed new life, like what you said, into the horror genre, and then a generation later we had Cabin in the Woods, so that was like a thing.
You know, I'm big fans of producer Joss Whedon, and you know, is it David Greenwald who I think actually directed it from a lot of the Angel TV shows, if you ever watch those.
I didn't watch Angel. I did catch a few episodes of Buffy.
You know, I like him, and also Bradley Whitford from West Wing. I believe is like one of the main guys in the movie, and seeing that pairing, I was like, you know what? I like myself some Bradley Whitford.
I don't really know that name, but I'm a big fan of the Whedons and what they do on TV. So yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay, but wrong podcast.
Speaking of Starman.
Yes.
So, issue 25.
Yes, and today I will be the one bringing you the synopsis.
Huzzah.
Yes, so let's just delve into it. The issue opens with Mr. Merritt, the villain of this arc. If you remember, he's that bald guy. I think we met him.
Not the other bald guy, that bald guy.
Yes. So he's looking for the poster that the Odairs and Jack are guarding, the poster that serves as a portal to another world, but also beholds his immortality. And we learn that he's a powerful man with all his material needs met, but he is a slave to a greater power, the monster on the other side of the poster. And then the scene shifts, and we see Charity and Mason in a motel. We learn that they've been in here for a while, and there's definitely some sexual tension going on. And another scene cut, and we see Jack visiting his dad. Hello, Ted. And we also meet Mikal again, another familiar face from issues past. So Ted is working on something, and we find out that since the last time we saw Mikal, he has lost all memories of his alien history. Also, he only speaks English now. We are reminded that Grundy is gone, and everyone's a bit sad, but also we are reminded that there is a world, a story, waiting for Jack in his father's house. So, again, another scene change. Bat people descend upon the motel that Charity and Mason are in at about the same time as Merritt comes for the poster, confronting the rest of the O'Dares and Jack. A fire is started where Merritt is, and the monster comes out from the poster, and then there's a battle, and in a heroic move, Jack gives chase to the monster when it appears to be escaping back into the portal, and the chapter ends with Jack frozen in the poster, the cosmic rod running through him out of his chest. Yes.
He is lost, he is lost.
Oh, yes, 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 that part. Oh, I did not see that coming, so that was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that he won't die because he's like the... do you pronounce it titular or titular? I don't titular.
I usually character. Say titular, but you know, it's one of those words I read more often than I actually hear said. So
same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know he is not going to die, so... And even if he dies, they'll find some way to resurrect him, as is the style of comic books. I'm getting very schooled on this.
Next up, Jaded.
Yeah. Yes, so that's the story, I think, for Starman 25.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Shall we talk about the cover?
Yes. Yes, let's talk about the cover. I remember you saying that it's joined up to the previous part of this story arc.
Yes, indeedy, yes.
Yeah, so we see the angel hand, but so we see the biblical reference again over here. You know, this the. I'm not sure whether this is supposed to be the tree of life or the tree of. Oh no, it's not the tree of life. Definitely, it's the tree of knowledge of good and evil because
the apples.
Yeah. Then again, in the original version, it wasn't, you know, it's not actually an apple, but...
Yeah, well, it was, I used to remember that. It was like a, not a kumquat, goodness.
Not a kumquat. Yeah, but it was, you know, growing up, I'm Christian, so growing up, my mom always told me, Lydia, it is not an apple.
What was it? What was it? I forget.
It was just a fruit, you know. The in the Bible, it wasn't specified what kind of fruit it was. It was just a fruit. But I don't know why people started, you know, drawing it as an apple. And then it became an apple. So, yeah. But Starman did buy into the apple trope, and they have illustrated it as an apple. And... Charity,
so what you're saying is this is not the issue to start your mom reading.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I would start her off maybe with the nice ones where Jack and his brother go back in time to sort of meet his mother. Yeah, so this is how you should be, Mom. No.
Bringing families together. Brent and Lydia talk Starman.
Yes. Okay, so I actually really liked the cover.
Me too.
Yeah, I felt it was kind of like anime-ish. Mm. Like, there's this anime called Escaflowne, which is interesting because I haven't actually watched it, but I've always wanted to watch it because it looked a bit like that, like very dreamy and and in another land, and you know the color scheme was also very similar. So I felt that this was very Japanese. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but yeah, that feeling, it felt very much like an anime. And how about you?
Well, I can, now that you say that, I can kind of see it, especially, you know, I would lean towards the face on the tree, and and I don't mean this in a denigrating way, but like the lack of overt details in the face, and there's something about the eyes which I think do kind of evoke like an anime manga quality. So I can definitely see that. I think there's something that kind of ties this in together. Like with the kind of like, okay, maybe that's kind of charity. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But definitely the shade and the snake work well together. Like
yes.
And maybe it's just the kind of the yellow quality and the leaves on the tree. Because looking back on issue 24, there was something to me that just kind of, like, it was nice, but it felt, as a single cover, somewhat unfinished. Whereas this one, even forgetting that it's, you know, the middle of a three-part cover, it still feels fully formed.
Same, yes. Felt the same way.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, the elements that we did like in last month's cover still work, like the kind of pencil drawing of it, the really detailed look. You know, it's still just all around a good cover. How to put it? Like, we get lots of covers that do kind of give us a notion of what is going to be inside the comic. I mean, that's kind of been a majority of it. There's been like a handful of just here's just a cool picture. But, you know, these, other than the fact that it's Demon Quest and there are elements of hell in the story, these don't really seem to forecast what's inside, other than who perhaps the characters are kind of going around. But, I mean, that's not necessarily a negative, but it is just kind of a change for what they've been doing until now.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I haven't really put all the three parts together.
Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely... Well, I don't know. Maybe because it's the middle, you know, it's the complete part. I don't know if I'm making sense. Like the focal point of it?
No, I see what you mean.
Yeah. So, I think that even though I haven't seen the third cover, this would probably be my favorite.
And this has nothing to do with your fangirlishness over Shade.
Oh, you know what? It didn't occur to me that it should be. Yes, but totally, I can. Yeah, that must be part of it. Subliminal. Yeah.
Shall we go on?
Yes. Yes, please. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. One thing this was in the last issue, I think at least in the second half of last issue, but I don't think we really commented on it, the kind of border that's present throughout.
Mm-hmm. Do you like it?
Not especially.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan either. It's like, I felt that they shrunk the story part of the page.
Yeah.
Didn't really like that.
Yeah. Like it's an interesting idea, but I don't think there's, you know. It just feels out of place and doesn't really feel like it's something that fits with this narrative.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, so the story opens with Merritt, right? And he's with his band of crooks.
I like how they're all wearing hats except for Merritt. I don't quite know why that is, but it's just everyone had, like, even one of them has, you know, something that makes him look like a character out of a Charles Dickens novel.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, you know, bald-headed Merritt. Yeah,
amplifying his baldness. Are you trying to say that? I don't know. But yeah, I think it's very distinctive, actually, because so far we haven't really had someone as bald as Merritt. Right, so having him be like this and with the bushy eyebrows and being a villain, it's we remember him. It, you know how some villains tend to be very like sort of like forgetful or non-threatening. Yeah, but Merritt isn't. Merritt,
are we talking about the last arc again?
We are totally talking about him. But he was a fake, remember? He was like not supposed to be a villain, so
yeah.
I get it. I get why the characterization was like that. But yeah, here I feel that Merritt is like the big bad. And that's good. Mm.
And I kind of... I also kind of like how you can see someone like Merritt would, in the real world of the... In the real world of the comic, also be someone who's kind of forgettable. Mm-hmm. You know, he who can kind of just kind of move through the decades, through time and place without anyone really being like, look, there's our villain. He's obvious suspicious with his bald head and eyebrows. Like, it just kind of, it's a nice character design and a nice way to make him stand out without standing out.
I get what you mean. Yeah. I mean, even now, sometimes it's very hard for me to distinguish between Jack and some of the Odairs.
Yeah.
Especially Mason. Yeah. They both look like young men, so it's very hard for me.
Yeah.
Right? So at the fight scene, actually, if Mason had been there, I wouldn't have been able to tell who was Mason and who's Jack. Yeah. Okay, so anyways, this first page, we see that Merritt's very determined to get the poster. But you know what? I actually forgot where the poster is housed. Is it in the police station or something?
Yes, it's I'm pretty sure it's either in the police station or in some type of like lab lockdown thing.
Right. Okay.
But it's being defended by the police.
Okay.
Yeah.
Namely the Odeas, right?
I'd forgotten that. And we kind of get reminded of this on the next page, but that the whole, like, it's being moved to Metropolis is kind of a setup.
Oh, really?
Well, at least that's the way they make it sound here, of like, yeah, we're moving it. Let's make sure we let the bad guys know we're moving it so they have to come get it.
Ah! Okay. I see it now. Okay. All right. What's next?
What's next is, you know, just before we move pages, I really like the panel where Merritt is saying, get them, and he's got that kind of almost like angry, pained expression on his face, and his hands are shaking.
Yeah.
So it's just a very nice, like, I can see the movement panel.
Right. Yeah, the way the right hand is outlined in a bolder line, yeah, that's very interesting trick to have us perceive it. Yeah. Okay. Two Fools.
Yes.
Another poster again. Mm-hmm. Every time we see the poster, I think it's a very useful technique to have the poster repeated like that, and also like to drum into the readers that when you're caught in on the other side, you appear on the poster. Yeah. So.
Yes.
That's a very cool device, I think.
Yeah, especially with the end of this issue, that's great.
Yeah. So if you didn't have that already, you know, happening in the first part of this three-part story, it wouldn't be as
much of a gut punch.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Great.
Yeah. So, over here, we have that scroll-like parchment thing, which tells us who created this issue.
Is this my cue? Did you want to try
it? Yes! No, I can't. All the names.
Well, this is Hell and Back Part 2, James Robinson, writer, Tony Harris, pencils, Wade Von Grobiger, inker, Greg Wright colors, Chuck Kim assistant editor. I skipped Oakley and NJQ who are doing the letters. And then finally we have Archie Goodwin as editor and our credit line of Jack Knight created by James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Yay. Oh, can we interrupt the Starman conversation for Archie Goodwin?
Yes.
Excuse me. I recently found out that Archie Goodwin was also doing like Marvel Comics.
Yes.
Right, because I'm writing something that involves comic books a little bit. And I've been researching on Cloak and Dagger.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I was like, wait a minute, I know this name. Like, Archie Goodwin, isn't he the guy who edits Starman? Yeah. And I'm like, yes! Ooh, okay. Like, I actually know, like, you know, one of those things, because I'm still, I always say, even though I've been at this for almost a year now, I'm still very new to comic books. And yet, like, outside of this little nucleus that is Brennan Lydia Todd Starman, I'm like pop culture, you know, I'm into Stranger Things, I'm into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I watch a lot of Big Bang Theory. So we're talking about fictional characters being into comic books and me being into those fictional characters but not exactly into comic books. And so doing this podcast is like, okay, I know what they're referencing, you know, I know what they're talking about. That's very cool.
Yeah, he's done a lot of work, especially with DC and Marvel. I mean, he's just a really renowned like creator and editor. You know, one of the characters he created, most people, you know, especially now will know, is Luke Cage.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Archie Goodwin. Wait, is he the one who said passed away? Was he?
Yes, he died of cancer in 98.
Oh, okay. Well, that's like, what, 2 years after this?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right. Thank you for introducing the creators.
No problem.
Yes. Let's go on.
Well, you know, and I really like this this segment of the book where it is just kind of our heroes hanging out and just kind of talking. I realized during this part that this is kind of what I've missed from the last few arcs is just kind of that slow kind of build of the Jack and his world and these little conversations about, like, you know, well, they're Irish, but we're American. And then, you know, I'm American too, even though my grandfather is English. And, you know, one time and the whole, like, King of Tears story is just a nice little capper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All these, whenever I come across all these, like, King of Tears, you know, this, you know, back in the day when my dad and your dad, when I see these things, When I see these things, I'm always thinking if, like, there's a comic book out there that documented it. Chances are high, right?
I mean, I always wonder about that, too. Like, I doubt there is a comic that resolves itself with these, like, in this way. Mm-hmm. Of the three of them just talking about, like, problems in Ireland and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But there could be a comic where it's, you know, Starman and what's his name, O'Dare? I forget, the father, Bailey O'Dare, is that it?
I can't remember, I'm sorry, Mr. O'Dare, yeah, but
and, you know, fighting the King of Tears. Like, that could totally be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I don't even know if I've ever read a comic with the King of Tears in it.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Good to know. Okay, so I really liked the banter as well. I don't know if you can call it banter, more of the conversation between the characters. I like it when you know your characters and they're very different. You can relate to them better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how it's all like shrouded in purple. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind of sinister kind of feeling. That's yeah.
I didn't get sinister, but I totally got this, like, in a way that they're just hiding out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they want this trap to look quasi unguarded to further lure Merritt in. Yeah. I mean, kind of for our readers' benefits. I'm certainly not saying that to be to say you're wrong, but I mean I just love that subjectiveness of comics of you know, what you see and what I see. They're not always going to line up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got sinister for the readers again. I got sinister because the pages that the conversation was taking place connected to the scene on the second page where they were all looking at the poster and it was kind of purple. Mm-hmm. And I always feel like when there's something evil in the midst of a group of people, they'll always have that aura there, that, you know, this is an evil thing and it shouldn't be here and we have to get rid of it. And it's like, again, you know, when Harry, Hermione, and Ron were in the forest in the last book, and they had to take turns wearing the Horcrux because it was so evil. Yeah, and it like kind of like made the mood very negative.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very cool that over here the purple is the reminder that, okay, we have this evil thing right here and we're faced with evil. But here we are talking about our identities and Irish food, you know, that was a nice juxtaposition. So very cool.
I liked it.
Yeah. And on the fourth page, I think the page where I think Jack is laughing.
Yeah.
I like that face.
I like it, but it looked the eye, like the one almost like whited out eye.
Yeah. Just
looks creepy.
Yeah. It is. But I can feel the way Jack is laughing, even though this is a 2D.
Mm-mm. It's definitely a belly laugh.
Yes, and the ha ha ha. Ha? Or ha. Yes. Alright, and then?
And then, you know, this is going to sound kind of strange when it comes to Merritt, but I really like that even though he's not shown to be, you know, a respectable character, he's also not shown as being a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that. Like, he's, you know, he's nice and polite to the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to be like overly menacing to the to his henchmen. You know, he has his goal and he has what he's doing, and what he's doing certainly isn't, you know, nice. It isn't a good way to live, but it's kind of what he does. But outside of basically needing to sacrifice people to maintain his own life, he doesn't seem to be necessarily a bad person, and I kind of like that.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I mean, I've been watching other types of like cartoons and other things where it's like, oh, here's a bad guy. We need to make sure that the bad guy is almost cartoonishly evil. And I just, even the demon that we see here, where it's like, you know, even as the demon is kind of like, go kill this person, it's like, don't be afraid, my servant, my loyal friend. We're still pals. You just have to go kill people for me because I'm a demon. Like, I don't know. It's just somehow that weirdness makes it more enjoyable to me.
You know what? I completely overlooked the fact that he is not a jerk, because to me it was, okay, he's the villain of this arc. He must be evil. Yeah, but you know what? You're right. It's really like that. You know, if it's cartoonishly evil, we can't take it seriously, I think.
Yeah, and you know, and not that there isn't a time and a place for over-the-top evil, but you know, it doesn't need to be the only flavor they come in.
Mm, true. Mm. Yes. Do you realize that all the scenes involving the characters, they're all like a shade of a certain color? Like a certain, we roll through like purple and then blue and then red and then yellow.
I do now. That's really nice.
Yeah. So it's a very it's like somebody put it on Instagram and went crazy with the filter.
Yeah.
So it was a really nice kind of demarcation for me, I think. Okay, now we're in the scene with the monster. Okay, now we're in the scene with Mason Charity. Yeah.
Yeah, just quickly doing a flip through the whole comic. There only seems to be one page where there's, I guess, a realistic.
Mm.
Well, I guess two pages. There's two pages where there seems to be realistic.
Mm.
Okay, now I'm seeing three pages. Nerds, but yeah, we'll get to them.
There's
two scenes which have realistic coloring.
Mm. Yes, and I like how they keep the thing consistent, because like it was only at the back that I realized that the yellow pages were Charity and Mason, and the first yellow page, the one that we're coming up to right now, was Charity and Mason. I thought it was Hope and Jack, and I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. And then I took a closer look, because at the back it was yellow, and then I went back and was like, okay, I get it now. Yeah. Again, it's because I was confused with Mason. I thought he was Jack.
I can see that. There's something about the suspenders, I think, that also adds to the feeling, because somehow suspenders just seem like something Jack would be more inclined to wear.
Yes. And also because Charity, I'm always seeing her in pink and like big clothes. So I didn't think that this was her. I thought this was still the page where they were in the hideout. And Hope had just changed. But no, it was because of its yellow coloring.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so we are at the page where... No, wait, what page are we on?
Right now, since we've been talking about Hope, I turned to that, that yellow, that first page of them.
Okay. Yeah. Interestingly, you just said Hope, which probably meant to say Charity. Charity,
yes.
But it's funny how these two names are both like attributes, you know? Hope and Charity? Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. I wonder if there's a connection there. I don't know. Okay, anyway, they are in a motel, and it looks like a cracked motel.
Yep.
The walls are cracked, but then again, good opportunity to point out the detail in this little grid. Like, it could have just been a wall, but it's
cracked.
Yeah.
Makes sense. It's a dive. There's a painting which just seems to be a big H.
Yeah. You know, I really love these kind of things. Like, it's comic books or even novels, when just a word or a piece of dialogue can completely change the way the scene looks in your head. Yeah, and like when they choose to add cracks to the motel wall, you immediately have that. By association, you know what kind of motel it is, what kind of town it is, and how much it costs, you know, things like that. So I really, really like that.
Mm-hmm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like such a simple decision, but it really impacts so much of this setting.
Mm. Yeah. Ooh, the chills.
And, you know, and again, just like simple little things. The slight difference on those bottom panels of Mason's face between his silent panel and the good, where he's just kind of slightly looking a bit more at her and got that little bit more of a smile, where it's still It's still on the side of stoic, but there's definitely a little bit of, you know, little bit of attraction there.
Yeah, the corners of his lips curving up. It's brilliant art, I think, the way the mouth is drawn. Wow. Okay. Excuse me.
We also kind of get a little bit of, like, you know, insight into Mason. Just a little bit about it. He doesn't feel the need to fill the space. He doesn't need to hear himself speak.
Mm. Yeah. Characterization right there.
Mm-hmm.
We do learn more about him on these, like, yellow pages at the back as well.
Mm, yeah.
Let's put a bookmark in that.
And you know what we didn't even mention is why we're kind of getting this little segment of them is that Goathead Demon did kind of just say, kill her!
Yeah, yeah.
You know, buddy.
Primary target right now is Charity. Merit. Yep. Like, Merit has to kill because it's the actual thing. There will be a woman who will be a threat to you. Mm. And he didn't even say what threat. Like, he didn't say, like, she will kill you or she will steal the poster or anything. It was just like, she will be a threat to you. You have to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, her life is in danger. But we also see that after this yellow page, it's back to the scene where Merit is with his goat demon monster master. And then he's like, he tells, the demon tells Merit where she is, right?
Yes, yes. Because Merit wants some safe and easy slaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's very explicit over here that the goat demon calls him servant. I mean, he does say it in the very first bit where he says, you know, my servant, my loyal friend.
Mm.
And it brings to mind that even though he is a mortal and he's probably, like, really rich or something, he is still a slave to this. Yeah.
No, okay. It's a nice little change there.
I am trying not to cough. Okay.
In the blue part of this page, it did take me a moment to realize that this was Ted that Jack was talking to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I only noticed when I flipped the page, so you're a bit early.
Like, there was something about the, like, when he mentioned, oh, I wanted to give you Wesley Dodds' regards, was like, is this? But it really wasn't until the mask flopped up, where I was like, okay, that looks like it could be Ted. And then once we get the glasses on the next page, it becomes, oh, definitely Ted.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, agreed. And, you know, after the entire thing, I realized that this is Ted keeping his promise. You remember a long time ago, he told Jack made him promise that Ted had to use his talents for science, you know, to make good, great things. And here is Ted fulfilling his end of the bargain, I think. So that's very cool.
Nah, definitely, definitely. You know, mm-hmm. And again, we get some of the stuff that we've been missing, which is just that relationship between Jack and his father.
I missed that. I didn't realize how much I missed it until I came to this part.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and just that kind of slow building of here's our central characters and here's the world they live in, and all it's just weird comic book goofiness of, I totally was hanging out with a demon one time. He was big and yellow and was spoken rhyming couplets. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, look, here comes our alien friend who now speaks English, even though he forgot his alien language, because, of course, that's how it works.
Yep. Yeah. Ah, there's so many threads that are hanging loose in this story that I can't wait to like grasp them all in my hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I want to find out about like is Grundy really dead and stuff like that. Yeah. So, but it was nice revisiting. Like it feels almost like this is Jack's childhood in a sense, because these characters happened when things were a lot simpler, I think. Like when he just became Starman and when he just like had better relations with his father, and it just brought me back to a time where Starman seemed a lot more simple. I don't know, like without all the other stories.
I kind of get what you're saying, but I'm not sure I'm quite there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it just felt familiar.
Oh, okay.
Ted and Mikal again.
Yeah. Yeah, nah.
Before all the, like, you know, he had to go to New York and then met Wesley and then he had to solve murders, and then there was, like, a lot of, like, things with Nash, and then, like, it's like he's been running around for so long. And then finally we see, oh, hello, familiar people.
And that this, you know, is a book that is, it's about family and it's about the city as well, and that, you know, the last arc, it was kind of disappointing even on its own, but it also was kind of the first time in these, you know, this first 25 issues of, or 26 issues of the proper series, where we did kind of get away from those elements. So it didn't really do itself any favors there either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, but the end of this little bit here with Ted, I thought it was the last two grids are my favorite, where he's like, and good luck to you, Jack, my son. Ha ha ha. I don't know, it's like, now, finally, Ted is proud of Jack. I mean, I know he's been proud of Jack for a while, but in the very beginning, he wasn't.
So, no. And somehow there's the fact that, like, the my son is arguably, I guess, well past when Jack could hear it. Like, he's not saying that to make Jack feel better. He's saying that because it's in his heart.
Yeah. He's being very Asian parent. Yes, I said it.
and I'm just like, I don't know how to really respond to that.
No, right, sorry. Yes, I could say that because I'm Asian. Okay, let's move on.
But before we move on, I do kind of like the just that little moment, and you know, partly it is because kind of what it foreshadows. So I almost feel like underlying this is a little cheating, but. When we go back to Jack's, like, you know, hey, I'm really sorry about, you know, Grundy being the killer of Skyman, Pemberton. Yeah. I mean, if I'd known, I would never brought him here. And just Ted's kind of like, well, I don't know if you did bring him here. Like, I mean, this feels like a different Grundy. And I just like that little moment, and kind of, like I said, it is foreshadowing, so it's kind of cheating, but what this is kind of alluding to that may come into play later.
Bookmarked.
Yeah. Okay. Next page?
Next page. It's a pink page.
Mm.
And this is nice as well. Like one of those roll call things.
Yeah. Yeah. And oh man, like whenever I see stuff like this, I always wonder, because this kind of echoes when we are going back to the Justice Society heroes fighting Ragdoll on the bridge, like the I can, I must, I dare. It's kind of like an expanded version of that. of, like, here's what this person's thinking. And both times, like, you know, it on so weird to say this about a comic, but on paper it feels like something that could be cheesy or could not work. But I feel in both these instances, Robinson just nails this kind of encapsulating feeling, gives it that little charge.
Yeah, I know. All right, the angle. Oh, is it Robinson? No, that's the Robinson wrote the story. Okay.
Yeah, and the word. Yeah.
Coupled with the art, you know, where they're all facing the same direction for like literally for all the characters in this page.
Mm.
Like even the guards standing at the poster.
Mm-mm.
Their faces are all slanted to that
looking upper slightly right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very, like, I don't know, things like that. The symmetry, I think. Do you call it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess. So and all the feelings, I think, you can really, I think that's the mark of a good piece of fiction where you can, like, you feel the feelings, you can always feel the feelings, it's strange, but...
Yeah.
So that's what I get from here. Like, I do feel that it's, like, it's dangerous. They're going in on this mission, and they're all, like... Mm. And it's funny, because they are all, the Odes, they're all holding something.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, Hope, she's the most badass. She's holding her gun. But her brother's okay, the cigar, fine, but pizza? The pizza. Yeah. So that, the art is very impressive in that sense, you know?
Mm. And I'm not gonna lie, the little bit of the romantic in me, or if nothing else, the married guy in me, is the whole, like, I'll do like I always do after a hard day. I'll go home and tell my wife I love her. Oh, it just gets me right there, you know? Get that little choke.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I really hope he doesn't die. I mean, I don't think he does, because at the end. Okay, well, not skip forward.
And speaking of just the... That's a great way to kind of underline that this is something that in there is going to be difficult, is that repetition of, if I survive this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't help but feel like the humor on this page is very sneaky, like the pizza. And for some reason, I find Jack's, I'm back. I don't know why, I just thought that was very funny. Like, it's like, serious situation, serious. And then Jack's like, hey guys!
The only thing that it could have made it better is if he were also carrying some type of, like, fast food with him in that hand. Yes. I'm back!
Yes.
I got some pop!
Yeah. So it could have been like very cool, like, hey, but it was like, no, it's like, I'm back. Oh, Jack.
And then we flash back to Mason and Charity.
A nice segue, because after Jack comes back, he's like, Hope is like, I wonder how Mason's doing, and then Jack goes, and Charity, and then cutscene, and we have yellow pages. So this is also a really nice little bit about Mason. I think. Yeah. And a little bit about the Odes and the dad. I don't know, I feel like also we see a lot of established relationships, especially Charity and Jack. It's like Jack talks to Charity and talks to Charity about Mason. But then he was only repeating what he heard. So you see immediately that Charity knows Jack well. Jack doesn't know Mason well. So it's actually very plain. But it was just that bit of dialogue that clued you in on that. And that's why I was like, yes, good writing! Yeah.
Well, and I like I like how that also comes back around with the very end of Mason's statements on this page of, you know, I'm my father's son, just like Jack Knight is his. Mm-hmm. And that those two sentences are so loaded. Because, you know, not only does it kind of reveal what Mason wants to be. Mason, he wants to live up to the reputation of his dad. He wants to be there. Mm-hmm. He wants to be not only who his father was, but who he sees his father of having been. But he also sees Jack as being that same person. Like, of course, Ted Knight and Jack Knight, they're basically the same person in Mason's eyes, mm-hmm. where so much of that, the conflict of these comics, I guess the intercharacteral conflict, has been that Jack and Ted did not start at being in sync at all. And it's only after them both really working on the relationship are they starting, I mean, I feel even after this issue, we can still be comfortable saying starting to forge those bonds despite their differences.
Yeah.
And here Mason is just taking it for advantage or taking it for granted that, like, no, they're in sync.
Yeah. I see that. And that's very cool. Mm-hmm.
So Lydia just had a little bit of a coughing fit. Hope she doesn't mind my saying on the air. So we did we got her a new lozenge.
Yes.
Got a and had a little break. So now we're just trying to think of a clever segue to start the recording again. And I figured, well, rather than trying to be seamless, why don't we just draw attention to it and people go like, okay, cool, we got you.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Try it again, Mason.
Charity and Mason, on the next page, he kind of also is like, yeah, and they don't pick on my sister like they do me. They're jerks.
The voice. Yeah. Well, I loved how he was sort of totally cool with saying that, like, how he and Hope, they both did gymnastics.
Yeah.
So it's nothing embarrassing about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. Now, on that same page, I'm pretty sure we have a mistake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I even checked, because, you know, we use the digital copies to talk along this. I do have the omnibuses, and I double-checked it there. And the same order is in the omnibus. But I'm pretty sure that the, well, aren't you the orator all of a sudden, is also supposed to be a charity line. And I just have a feeling that, like, the actual order of this is supposed to be Charity saying, well, aren't you the order all of a sudden?
Mm.
I got you talking all of a sudden, didn't I? I knew if I asked you the right, shh. Because it just, I don't know. It's either there's something, like, weird going about the thing, but the shush and aren't you the order all of a sudden, like, it just, I don't know.
Mm, okay.
It feels kind of jonky to me, like, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I just kind of crazy?
No, now that you've drawn attention to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because we know for a fact that Mason doesn't really talk, so
yeah.
He wouldn't... It wouldn't be him saying, aren't you the orator of us all of a sudden?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So I don't know. It feels like maybe something, like, either got left out, like, well, aren't you the orator all of a sudden? Maybe he was supposed to say, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's something, because then with the, I got you talking, didn't I? I knew if I could, I asked the right, and then having the dot, 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 where he could cut her off with a shh.
Mm-mm.
Feels more natural.
Yeah, agree. We should tweet Robinson about this.
Well, you know, it's been a while since either of the gang, the guys, have you know, asked, but
okay.
You got Robinson talking to us.
No, I'm chicken.
Me too. Especially not like, hey, here's a comic flaw in production from, you know, 20 years ago. Do you remember the details? Like, something tells me this might be lost this time. I'm like, yeah, I guess that is weird, huh?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well. But Mason, Mason feels danger.
Yes. And he instructs Charity to hide herself.
Yeah. And we get, on the next page, we get another one of those moments where it's just two characters talking. I almost feel like I should say this is like staple Robinson at this point. Two characters talking about something that's interesting, absolutely not related to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of helps establish that mood. Oh, like, these are bad dudes.
Yeah. It's funny how you can instantly tell they're bad dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apart from the conversation, of course, but I didn't have to read the conversation to know that they were bad.
Okay. And a little shout out here. If you look, it's the Jolly Roger Motel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the Jolly Roger, a pirate reference. And, you know, I think I remember reading that that Jolly Roger might have been one of the, like, studio names that, or kind of association names that Tony Harris and some of his other, like, creator friends were using at the time. So there you go, just a little shout out.
Might it be one of his pirate names?
Might be. It's certainly a reference to a pirate. I'm not sure if I'm correct about that being one of his words about being a reference to one of his other kind of creative endeavors. Something I probably should have looked up beforehand, but, you know, well, there you go. Yeah, he was 90s. He moved on to form Jolly Roger Studio in Macon, Georgia. There you go.
Oh, nice. Thanks for that.
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha. Okay, so sound effect. I always like the sound effects.
Crash.
Crash with a K. Oh. So a lot of motion, I think. Very, the art here, it's very interesting choice of scenes, you know? Like, again, things that you wouldn't, not that you wouldn't do in film, but it would look weird in film to have a scene like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly like that. Yeah. But this one, it works so well with comic book scenes.
Well, and, it does remind me of The Professional.
Mm-hmm.
Leon the Professional. Have you ever seen it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that. You know, a little the staging is different, but it definitely has that feeling. And also shows that, you know, enhances that, like, kind of what Mason was saying before, of he's going to do things his own way, and also that he's very capable.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, bang, bang.
Yes. And can we go on to the next page?
Please. Ray?
Okay. Yeah, bang, bang, bang. I was like, how is he balancing the way he is? Obviously, he's holding onto something with his left hand, and he used to be a gymnast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he probably has a really strong core, but still, it's very impressive.
Yes.
To describe to our listeners how he's hanging, like, suspended horizontally over the doorpost, over the floor, so he's, like, horizontal with nothing propping him up except his left hand on a kind of hold or something. And that's why the bad guys don't see him when they come in. Yeah, and then he goes bang bang, and I guess they die. It's one of those things, right? When you are outnumbered, you just have to use your head and think about how to defeat them.
And in a way, this is the thinking back to way back when, this is the second time that Mason has kind of been, you know, action from above. I think one of his first appearances was doing a thematically similar event.
Yeah, I want to say the time where the Chandler building exploded, Noemi Carr was in the explosion, but I can't remember which issue it is. and what was Mason's, who Mason saved and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely related to that incident. Yeah, so... Oh, sorry, do continue. Oh,
I was going to say next page?
Oh, yes, yes. Excuse me.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, so we've got the villains kind of coming in, and it's just a great little, especially after that one little brief scene of action, there's such a great establishing of tension in this page.
Yeah.
We can already see it's going to start, but there's still that build of, I hope we haven't misjudged anything.
And we also see the danger, because in the first shot, the first grid rectangle, we see Merritt and his band of brothers, like, kind of, like, approaching the police station.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely it's a police station, because there's the word police there. So it's like... And it's crazy, because if you think about it, these are people trying to storm a police station.
Yeah.
They have the guts to do it, you know? And they're not afraid of... They're not afraid of losing this. They probably think they have it in the bag. Because, I don't know, they have Satan on their side. Something like that. So.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Just, they don't have a choice.
Okay.
And the next page, it's... The next, really, just several pages are so quick, so just powerful.
Yes. And, you know, you don't really know who's good and who's bad, for me. Yeah, at first glance, I'm like, the fire, who's it killing, the good people or the bad people?
Yeah, yeah. And it looks, you know, I mean, we're lucky when we get the shots with the uniforms and their very police uniform look. But in some of the ones, it is kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. Like
when we get to the O'Dares and their plain clothes.
Yeah. Because, for me, a lot of Merritt's people had hats on.
Yeah.
Some of them didn't. But, and you do see the people in the hats getting hurt as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they're not, like, immune to the incendiary whatever charges. Yeah, to the fire. So, but they are here prepared to you know, lay down their lives to get the poster back. Yeah, and the colors on these pages also, I think they just make the danger a lot more real. You know, and
no.
Yeah, but interesting. I have a question about the bit with Jack and one of the older brothers and Hope, Miss Purple. It's like they're not there.
Which
the last one?
The it's starting. Yeah. Because I get the feeling that the O'Dares and Jack. It's not kind of clearly explained, but I got the feeling that they were like in the room closest to the painting. Or the poster, and that the kind of the cops on the outside are more like perimeter or like a foyer.
Sorry.
Oh no, you can do it. Stay strong. We've only got 3-4 more pages. You can do it. I believe in you, Lydia.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm fine. Yes.
Yes.
I see now. So, the three of them, they're in the inner sanctum.
And also the other brother.
Yeah, why is it so hard to keep track of their names? Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry, this is not pee, this is me pouring water into a cup. we can go on.
I like how over the next couple of pages we still have the purple background, but the coloring is done in such a way where it really adds a dimension. So, you know, we'll have, like, the blues and the yellows for some characters, but then some of them will also be in kind of real colors, like especially on the page, maybe two pages later, where it's Jack and Clarence fighting on the good guy side.
Yeah.
But we have, like, purple figures and a yellow figure, and then Clarence and a guy he's shooting are in kind of regular colors, but just having those different layers of color really adds, it adds a depth. That's the word I'm looking for. Adds a depth to the panel, so it's easier to see that, like, oh, the guys in the light purple are farther back, and Jack in dark purple and the guy getting kind of shocked yellow, they're closer, but really the foreground is definitely Clarence.
Yeah.
I coughed too. Nerds, it's catching over the Skype.
Ah, damn it. Yeah, I do get what you mean. It lends a lot of dimension to the scene as well, because this is, like, for me, I interpreted it as the Jack doing it, like, no look pass, you know, he zapped the guy from the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was, like, that there's even more depth to that, like, he's a little bit in front of him and stuff like that, so, and they're talking to each other. It's a very, very cool scene, even though it's 2D.
Yeah. I just noticed, just this moment of the cartridge expelling from the gun as Clarence is firing the shot.
I'm looking for it. How do you see it? Oh, right!
Yeah.
Yeah, detail.
Yeah, good job, good job.
Yeah. Okay, and then just, the mask. Sorry, yes.
Oh, I was going to say the build, master, the poster.
Yeah, and over here, Merritt looks very demonic.
Yes.
Right, compared to his previous, appearance. Like, he got more and more demonic.
Yeah.
As the pages came by, as the pages turned.
Now he's even got, like, grody fingernails and...
Yeah.
You know,
and eye whites.
Still not a jerk, though. He's just doing his best. You know?
Yeah. Mm. The poster!
Out comes the seahorse demon.
Oh, it's a seahorse now. Yes. Seahorse monster!
Yes!
Yes. Okay. So, Barry got, like, got grabbed. Caught. Yeah, by the seahorse monster with tentacles. And okay, the person who was going, like, no, the thing took one brother, it's not taking another. I thought it was Jack, but I don't think it was Jack who said that. Was it?
No, I'm pretty sure, because he's also using the gun. I'm pretty sure that's Clarence.
Okay. Yeah. And Barry is the one with the wife, is it? That's Clarence.
Yeah, Barry's the one with the pizza.
Okay. Wow, I'm so confused. Okay, yes.
We're just going to have to make a family tree.
Yeah.
Although it'll just be the names on one straight line, so that might not help.
Yeah, but you know what would help? Barry with the pizza and Clarence with the cigar.
There you go.
Yes.
Hope with the gun.
Yes, yes. Oh, Hope and Mason are easy to remember. And the Matt is the one in the poster, so
he's
also easy to remember. Okay. So, Clarence is shooting at the bad guys, and yet he can't take down the monster because he's shooting at the bad guys. And so, again, I think this is where, you know, Starman is Starman, the superhero. I'm on it, right?
Yeah. Especially because, I mean, I just get the feeling that guns really won't have that much of an effect on a demon.
Yeah, the demon, So, but I wonder if it was Jack's power that chased the demon into the portal, or...
I like to think it was. Mm. Oh, but sorry, you had an ore.
I had an ore, which is, was the demon trying to lure Jack into the portal? I don't know.
You know, I think I'm gonna go with this... My personal interpretation will be on Jack's power, because I think if the demon weren't escaping to get away from Jack, but it wanted Jack, then it would have stayed there to try and grab him. I'm gonna go with that.
Okay.
Or if it wasn't the power, it could have also held on to Barry and take him as well.
Mm-hmm. True. Okay. All right. And then we see that even though the monster released Barry, Jack, he did not relent. He just like, no, we have to get Shade and Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he went in.
And Merritt's very happy about that.
Yes, he said. Yeah. And you know, the thing was, when I saw that little picture of Merritt there with the years, in his left hand he's like holding somebody's head, but I wonder if he's holding just the head, or is he like, you know, it's like, ew.
Yeah, the way it's inked at the bottom there, it does look like it could be just a head.
The show. Sorry. Yeah, and if it's that, I mean, you know, the way it's do you call it inked? It's inked the one where, you know, where the thing is like dripping from his hand, hand. Don't tell me he sliced it off with his nails, you know? Like, ew!
Grody. But,
yeah. Like, nice detail, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is where he's the bad guy, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, can't,
I mean, he's been offense. Evil. He's just not jerky evil.
True.
You know?
Yeah, pure evil. Yeah.
And then, but then that next page, then all is quiet, all is still.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a great moment. Especially, like, on the left side of the people in the real world, that it's mostly the people who you think might be good guys who just look shocked.
Yeah.
And then to have Merritt, while strangling someone, just looking so viciously pleased.
Wait, Merritt is the one strangling someone?
Isn't that Merritt with like the...
It might be, yeah.
I thought that was supposed to be him, because everyone looks slightly off model, but I just took that was still supposed to be Merritt.
Oh, you know why I got confused? It's because he had, like, that black thing on his head. I thought that was hair, but it might be a shadow.
Yeah.
It might be a shadow. Yeah. Yeah. Totally, yes. I wonder if the words are... that, like, the words he has lost is actually on the poster, or if that's for us, the readers, on the other side.
I totally think that is on the poster, just like the two fools.
Oh, okay. Was. Wait, so... so, okay, this is the part that I probably will find out in the next issue. I don't know, but did Jack replace the two fools, or is this another poster? No, it can't be another poster.
Yeah.
So where did they go, you know? So they must be still in the dimension.
I think they're... well, I think he replaced it. Replaced them on the what is being shown on the poster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, to be concluded, says the last bit.
Two ideas here, and I want to see what you think about them.
Mm-hmm.
Is looking at Jack and the way he's posed.
Okay.
I think of two different things. I think one of kind of the is it the Da Vinci? I always forget the name of the man with the arms and legs aside. I think of that. And I also think, because of the way the staff is, I'm wondering if this is kind of a, is it a, like a messiah figure type thing? Because of the piercing the ribs?
Yeah. Yes! On the cross, Jesus was stabbed with a spear in the ribs.
And the arms aren't quite cross-shaped, but then again, they also have limited page space to do that with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a close...
Yeah. Like, you know, sacrifice and things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Vitruvian man. Yeah, Vitruvian man. Yes, that's the man in the wheel.
Yes.
Where Da Vinci, that sketchy thing?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so I did think about that as well when I saw it. Yeah. I really wonder what it means. Like, I don't know the law behind the Trivium men, so I can't really say.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, last bit, we you know, we know that Jack is on the other side.
Da-da-da.
And you know what? I think the poster often paints these, like, they are not necessarily true, these one-liners, like Two Fools or He Is Lost. It's just the dimension's opinion of the people.
Wait. Are you suggesting that a demonic presence is not entirely honest?
Yes, that's exactly
right. I'm not sure if I can go there with you. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll see. And then I can say, I told you so. Yeah.
I like it.
Yes. Okay, so that wraps up our
overall, what do you think of this issue?
Well, I thought it was a really good one compared to the previous few.
Mm.
I felt everything fell into place. It was well paced. Mm. I was invested in my characters and their relationships and their missions.
Mm.
So that was really good. What about you?
I'm right there with you. Because of the last issue, I did find myself, like, at almost every couple of page flips, I felt that, like, are we going to get, like, a whole box of kind of story, narrative, backstory that kind of pulled us out? And every time I saw that it wasn't a huge page of text, I felt myself just kind of relaxing and going, like,
Yes, exactly.
And really, I mean, that was that kind of fear that this great storytelling was going to get broken up was the hardest part of the issue. But yeah, this I've really enjoyed this.
Yep. Mm. But the only thing I can criticize is that border thing around the...
Yeah.
Around the page. I don't really like it.
I don't really like it either. It didn't hurt the story for me, but I do definitely agree, like, I would be happier if it weren't there.
But, you know, I have a theory, which is they want us to think that it's a frame, and every page is a poster.
Yeah, like, I was kind of wondering that, too, because I've seen other comics use something like this, where, you know, they want to make something feel kind of bookish, so they almost give it, like, a storybook border. So I've seen this type of thing done, but it just, you know, it doesn't feel as like it really works here, per se.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, so those are our thoughts about this issue.
Yeah. Where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, and YouTube at the username QUEK channel. Quick channel. Sorry, what?
What's going on in the background?
Oh, it's my husband.
Gotcha. Whoops, sorry. Didn't mean to draw attention to it.
No problem with you. I didn't know that it would pick up.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Are you playing with your aluminum
friends? Playing with it. No. Yes, so channel, QEK channel, you can find actually on most social media. How about you, Brent?
You can find me at Dead Troubadour on Twitter. You can go to my main website, deadlytroubadour.com. You can like my Facebook page, Brent Thomas, the Brent Thomas author page. And if you really want to help me out, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and you can give me a dollar.
Give me a dollar. Yay. Help me fund the show. Help me, you know, honestly, the little bit of a tip in there, it can be just a monthly subscription, I guess. Mm-hmm. And right now, you know, I'm trying to think of some good perks to give to people that are helping me out right now. It's just kind of getting mentioned. You can either get mentioned on the air or in the comments, like a thank you page on my next novel that's coming out. But, you know, that helps do such things as kind of giving, like right now, you know, I don't want to make this completely a business thing, but this show technically is in the red. Admittedly, it's only like, you know, $25-$26 a year, but that's for my hosting plan and if things go over. And then, you know, I had someone kind of like talk about recently about podcast and audio quality and things like that. But I gotta be honest, all those type of things, like the softwares and the things, they cost money. Yeah. And you know, I got a baby and I can only spend so much on software. Paizo's a great software, but you know, it doesn't let you do much mixing. So if you want to help out, just feel free to go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So see you next issue.
See you next issue.
Bye. Bye-bye.
There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star man. Not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. It's only let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.